Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 18, Ditti Vows to Kill King Indra. This morning, text numbers 44 and 45. 44 has no purport. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, Kashyapa Muni, thinking in this way, became somewhat angry. Condemning himself, Maharaj Pariksit, descendant of Kuru, he spoke to Ditti as follows. So what's happened is that Kashyapa has become very upset with his wife. She's behaved in an exemplary way and pleased him, satisfied him greatly, and she asked him for a benediction. He says, whatever you want. And she says, give me a son that will be able to kill Indra. Now, so then he lamented her. I say her bloody-mindedness, although she seemed to be so pious. She actually simply wanted revenge on her son, Indra, who was so yesterday we heard how he promised to give her a benediction.
And that's what I will.
And he can't break his promise. But he says at the same time, Indra does not deserve to be killed, so he has a dilemma. So now he says, yesterday he said he thought of a solution. So now, having thought of the solution, he speaks like this to Ditti. So now we're up to text 45. Somewhat angry though. So text 45. Kashyapa Muni said, my dear gentle wife, if you follow my instructions regarding this vow for at least 1 year, you will surely get a son who will be able to kill Indra. However, if you deviate from this vow of following the Vaishnava principles, you will get a son who will be favorable to Indra. Srila Prabhupada's report.
Joker, trying to take my rap over. I don't think so.
The word Indraha refers to an asura who is always eager to kill Indra. An enemy of Indra is naturally a friend to the asuras. But the word Indraha also refers to one who follows Indra. When one becomes a devotee of Indra, he is certainly a friend to the demigods. Thus the words Indraha Deva Bandhava, or they say, your son will kill Indra, but he will be very friendly to the demigods. If a person actually became a friend of the demigods, he certainly would not be able to kill Indra. Kashyapa Muni said, my dear gentle wife, follow my instructions regarding this vow for at least 1 year, you will surely get a son who will be able to kill Indra. However, if you deviate from this vow following the Vaishnava principle, you will get a son who will be favorable. So, in translation, Srila Prabhupada has made some things explicit that are implicit. There's no way to capture this in English. The equivocation that's built into this statement, Indraha Deva Bandhava. First of all, so what happens in Sanskrit, you have the word Indraha, which ends in a long A. And then you have the next word. If the next word is a deva, which means not the demigod, let's say a demon. The next word is a deva. The final long A of Ha and the A of Adeva merge and just become long A.
But if the word is Indraha, and then the next word is Deva, you'll get the same thing. Indraha, Deva. So whether it's Indraha Adeva or Indraha Deva, you can't tell. And Indraha itself is equivalent. So she's saying, your benediction is, you will get Indraha Deva Bhagavata. The friend of the demons is the killer of Indra, or Deva Bhanda, friend of the demigods, who is a follower of Indra, and it doesn't say which. But what it means is, Prabhupada says, I'm going to give you a vrata, a vow, for 1 year, a 1 year vow. You vow to follow a certain procedure or process for 1 year. And if you deviate, then your son will be favorable. So this is the way he's going to satisfy her desire, but without actually doing so. Well, we'll see. How Kasyapa is being very, very clever. So, as we know, Ditti is there's two races, so to speak, in the universe, interplanetary races. So if you're ever a fan of science fiction, you'll love Krishna consciousness. Although this is not fiction, it's history. But you see all over the place, novels are written, fantasy novels, things like that, about cosmic battles between different forces of good and forces of evil. And they all have their basis in fact. And people are attracted to when the film Star Wars became so popular. That's what people were attracted to. There was this big interplanetary cosmic battle between the good guys and the bad guys. The bad guy was really bad, Darth Vader or something. The good guys are really good. They were fighting over the universe. People are immediately attracted to this story because it's actually the truth. So the universe is set up by Krishna for a purpose to lead the conditioned souls back. And he has his deputed agents and managers to run the various functions of the universe. For this is alien idea to modern people, because we're busily personalizing depersonalize God. God is just force. God is just energy. And we depersonalize the universe. It's just forces hiding blindly, not in control. There are no gods. The whole human race, up until 2 centuries ago, maybe a few more centuries, thought the whole universe is being run by people. Why is the planet called Jupiter? Because it was thought to be dominated by a person named Jupiter. Jupiter is Latin corruption of Greek, Zeus Mitar, God the Father. It was thought to be, these are all names, Mars, Venus, Saturn, these are all people. We ran these planets. Now we don't think so. No one thinks that the Mars probe or Venus probe are going to actually see how rising from the sea on the scallop shell. But, so this mentality has gone out of style. And it's all just dead nature. We push and pulled around by personal forces of energy. So, God's been depersonalized, and now we've depersonalized the cosmos. And of course, human beings are now busy depersonalizing each other.
I'm the fly Jew, but not really true, because one of the chosen few is intent on a possible mission. So just listen, or else you'll be dissing.
You know that you will not make sure
your bitch is a whore, and you are a fool, because you said crime. And this is the deadline. Watch and think, don't change your mind, because on the Zion chain, so
just
cooperate with the top cheese crew with the tree that's made, and the rhymes you'll see, I deliver.
Reason,
make you sweater, make you shiver, but be cool, just relax.
Here we go again.
Suckers steal a beat when you know they can't win. You stole the beat. Are you having fun now?
You understand that the absolute
gonna show
truth
you how it's done. You don't want to label as a nerve fucker. You're blocking my nerves, you MC sucker.
There are also persons. The soul is called Sarvagata, huh? It means goes everywhere, all pervading. So anyway, the Vedic knowledge is that there are civilizations on other planets, higher human civilizations, and some of them are demigods. That means they're creatures like us, born and they die, but they live for a long time. They're not God in the sense of spiritual beings. They're humans. And they run their higher responsibilities. People running the universe that enjoy a much higher standard of living. These are devas. I talked about them. And when Kali Yuga began 5,000 years ago, it's a simple fact that we used to be part of the vast interplanetary civilization established by Vishnu. Human civilization that is a standard human civilization, a normative human civilization, just not that it's all under the grasp, or that we can make out of ourselves anything we want to be. Because we see, looking around, anthropologists and others can look around and they see so many varieties of human civilization. Many of them have embraced this doctrine of cultural relativism. That is really all values, ways of life, goals, and aims are manufactured by a particular culture. And the standards of one culture cannot be used to judge the standards of another culture. This is generation. Very widely. So, in this way, because who can say this is right or this is wrong? We have ours and somebody else's. And we can't judge across cultural boundaries. This notion, this new values, ways of life, the human creation. But our claim is different. Our claim
think you can do?
Is that the standard of human civilization?
What you think you can say, what you think you can do, what you think you know, and what you think you're
what makes it standard? How can you say it's devaluing civilization? There's a way of being for there was established with the creation of the universe. That is what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Chapter of Varnashram, that this system of Varnashram Dharma for Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, he said, this was created by me.
Yo, Jet. Yo, what's up, man? Yo, keep the belief.
So we can understand that certain things are the way they are because they are created that way by God. Squirrels live a certain way. Raccoons live a certain way. Wolves live a certain way. Beavers live a certain way. Bees live a certain way. They've got their established standard spot arm sense, their own way of being in the world. So in the same way human beings do. Well, beavers have no choice. Squirrels have no choice. It's all hardwired in, so to speak. Programming is there, and they follow it. You don't get beavers decided they're going to move out and stop damming lakes and building lodges. They live in their lodges. They don't go for condos. That's because they're beavers. That's what they do. Their choice is limited, and the things change. They just stop. The lakes dry up, so there are no streams. The human beings, we see all kinds of different styles of life going on, different forms of life. Modern Western civilization, and you see Dogu and Baku and Zuni and all the kinds of Aboriginal tribal people, and all different kinds of things going on. Well, that's true, but no one's denying what we see. But what we see is only part. We only see the human race 5,000 years in the future. We're only looking at the human race in a form of a degenerate phase. So our perception is not a complete sample from which to generalize at all. So, just as we see that all these living entities were created by Krishna with a certain way they want to be, similarly, the way they should be, similarly, human beings are created in the same way. There's a standard human civilization, and it was created by Krishna. This is the way you should live. That civilization was created so that when a soul comes to the human form of life, he can get out. He can graduate. And live this purpose. For Krishna created Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras. And he gave the instructions for that human civilization. It's called Vedas. So when the universe was created, the Vedas were also produced. It was part of the creation. The manual for running the universe. The manual for human life. Hello, you're in this universe. You're a human being. You have a human body. Now, here's what you're supposed to do. Otherwise, how are you ever going to figure it out? 10,000 years of research and you're only just getting started. It's very complicated, this material world. everybody knows what's going on. You want all the philosophers to come to some kind of agreement?
Like that.
You want to wait till the scientists have figured everything out? Before you make a decision what to do with your life? And remember, so far, the history of science has been the history of finding out they were wrong. Only science has been able to convince everybody that a series of dogmatic errors is progress. They've done that. Never mind that, you know, one whole generation was taught, for example, we were taught. All of us, my age, people my age, we were all lied to. The massacre, we were taught that there were these big, sluggish, cold-blooded lizards, dinosaurs, roaming the earth. And one day somebody said, no, everything we said was wrong. And there were these big things, but they were warm-blooded. They had hair, and they were probably very frisky. So all of us have this picture of these, you know. Now they have hair, and they're warm-blooded. And, so nobody actually says to you, you know, look, we've got these big bones laying around. And we imagine this may have been happening. We imagine that may have been happening. But really, we don't know. All we know is we got these bones. You know? Some of the most famous images of dinosaurs in our mind are false. There's one big one in the Museum of Natural History where it was finally figured out that it was a concoction. And actually, the body and the head that are together were found 5 miles apart. And somebody had a body without a head, and somebody had a head without a body. And never mind that they were 5 miles apart, they stuck them together and put it up in the museum, you know. And nobody told you. So much of this stuff, when you actually get down to the bedrock, what is the actual evidence, and what is actually going on, or what do they actually know? They don't know much. But they want to pretend to know a whole lot more. This is called cheating. So the evidence is not in, and whatever you believe to be true is probably wrong. I've mentioned before that I saw a headline, a cover on one of these Omni or Discover magazines, you know, and it was about some particular thing. Scientific discovery, and it said we used to think something something, but now we know something something. Well, how can that be that we used to think? But when they used to think, they knew, and now they say they know. It's really what they think. So whatever we think now, that's what we know, they say. But it'd be more true to say we used to know, but now we think. They didn't used to know. They never knew. How could you say, you know, they never knew? That means they lied. They lied to generations and generations. We've been lied to ceaselessly by people who say we know when they don't know. And they don't have the guts to say what we really know is, well, we found these bones and we found those bones, and you can put them together like this, you can put them together like that. I mean, really, you know, it's a lot of fun. You can spend your life doing that. But, you know, when you come to an end, you know, we've only dug up a few little proportion of the earth. And really, 90% of whatever fossil record there is has been lost by erosion or whatever. It's gone, you know. So really, we'll never know what happened. We're here, and the whole thing is very mysterious. There's lots of contradictory evidence. We've got this little time scale, but, you know, we have some rocks that's Precambrian rock but it has pollen in it. So actually, you know, if you look at that kind of stuff, we'd have no idea what happened. That's what we know. So you can wait until they figure it all out. These people who have proven cheaters, proven liars to generation upon generation, who like to claim they know and they have no right to it. And they'll admit it among themselves. You know, but when it comes down to writing the textbooks or applying for grants, then, you know, they know. So you can't get any purpose out of that kind of stuff. It's just the problem of human knowledge. You've got a little bit of time, you have a little bit of space, and if you want to know by means of your defective senses, you're likely as what you see in front of you, that may be right, but what you make of it, that's another thing. That's immediately it's speculation. Immediately it's speculation. So it can't be relied upon. That's why Krishna very kindly provided the Vedas. Here is the operating manual of the universe from the creator of the universe. He's handed it down from one to another, to another, to another. Now people will have that, well, how do I know that? You know, you say you're skeptical about everything. How am I to believe this claim that Krishna handed it down? Actually, we know what the universe is made up. We know what it's for. We know the purpose of life because the person who manufactured the universe told us. That's what we're saying. Krishna told Brahma. He told a number of people. One of them is Brahma. We deal with Brahma because we come from the tradition of Brahma. So Brahma, having received this perfect knowledge from Krishna, not everything there is to know, but everything you need to know for running the universe and for conducting human life, Brahma teaches it to Narada. Narada teaches it to Vyas, and so on. It goes down. It's passed down. And along with the knowledge is the way to train people so that they hear it and pass it down without any distortion. That's part of it. That's part of it. Because it's jnana and vijnana. Theoretical and practical. So he passes it down like this, one down to the next, down to the next, down to the next. And that tradition is still going on. And so when we encounter Srila Prabhupada, he comes from that tradition of knowledge passed down from the very beginning. So you can say, well, how do I know? Why shouldn't I doubt that? But if you simply think this, first of all, is it possible? Just is it possible? Not is it true? But is it possible that the creator of the universe could have given over an instruction book called the Vedas that was perfect? Yeah, it's possible, I'm sure. You can't say it's impossible. Certainly if there's a God and he's benevolent and all good, that's just exactly what he would do. He wouldn't leave everybody sitting there scratching their heads. That's what he would do. It's reasonable that God would do something exactly like that, give people instruction and arrange for it to be what? Transmitted. One after another, it comes down that way. That's all perfectly reasonable. That could be the case. So, if somebody comes and claims to represent that tradition, you can't say that it's impossible. Your problem is trying to understand, well, whether there is such a thing. Well, there's the claims of the tradition itself, and you can say, well, those are their claims. I want some outside verification. Well, what outside verification could there possibly be? Who else do you want to tell you that this is the valid tradition? You know, like for example, you go to a college, or say you go to a physician. Right? How do I know this physician is bona fide? Well, here's a medical degree on his wall. Says he, you know, University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. Good medical school, right? No, I don't know that it's a good medical school. Who certified this school? You know, who says this is a good school? So they say, well, the certifying agency is the United States government, Department of Health, Education, Welfare, conducts inspections and says that it's, you know... Who certified the United States... You know? What do you do? What do you want? Where do you... The fact is, that's the system of authority, and is what it's worth. Ultimately, your test is, you go around to the doctor, and you know, you get some of his former patients. Are you cured? Is he good? Is he? If you take, you know, and you can risk it a little bit. You try it out and see if it works. That's about all you can do, really. So, but especially when you come down to the ultimate system of authority, which rests in Krishna, and you want to say, well, I want some outside verification. You know, Srimad Bhagavatam says what it is, but I want it from somewhere outside. There's no one outside to verify it. Who else is going to do it? You simply have all the great sages and saintly persons and so on who have been trained up in this very same system of authority. So there's another tradition of knowledge, if we'll call what we had today, that's been passed down since the beginning of the universe. And to us now seems weird, but it's standard. What's weird is this whole civilization. That's what's weird. Not the Vedas. But we don't understand anymore that this is what has been going on. You know, we think knowledge was invented in 1560 or something. Francis Bacon or somebody discovered, you know, the senses, the scientific method, whatever. That's what we did. But so we say, here's this system coming down, and it gives us this standard human civilization, and those that follow it and maintain it are called demigods. But then there's the anti-demigods. You know, we have the demigods, devas, and then we have in this verse the adevas, the anti-demigods. And they say, to hell with this, you know. They don't like the system. They don't want to follow. Because the system arranged by Krishna is to utilize the resources of material nature, human and non-human material nature, so that souls get released. It's for the purposes of liberation. But the demoniac civilizations have another purpose, which is sense gratification. So they misuse the senses and they misuse the sense objects to cause bondage. Demons think, why not just engage in sense gratification? This material world is not so bad. If we simply grab a hold of, get control of it, take it away from the demigods or God, whoever, then we can run it the way we like. We can fix it up. We can use technology, our minds, our arts and crafts, and we can do wonderful things, and we can really make this world a very, very nice place. So these are two antagonistic mentalities that have been going on like this. And what we see around us is demonic civilization. And so the values of this demonic civilization are antagonistic toward the purposes of self-realization. They want to maximize sense gratification. We want to maximize self-realization. So there'd be opposite values. So of course our business is to actually, we're trying to reconnect. It's become, the whole modern world has become disconnected from the Vedic culture. Our idea is to restore it. People become Krishna conscious. So many other dimensions. Not only will they understand Krishna, but also they'll see demigods, and so many things will become manifest again that no one has seen. This, all the superstitions and stuff like that, people find out they're true. But simply they're just not able to see them because they didn't have the right training or understanding to see what is actually there. So by experience, that's there. Here it's realized knowledge. One takes up the process of realization and you can see for yourself. And after all, the way things are getting, there may not be much alternative anyway. It's going to get pretty rough. Okay, I'll stop there. Any questions, comments? Yeah?
So we know that it's the basic psychology of the demons to try to kill God, or the concept of God.
Yeah.
Would you say that there's some sort of economic motive behind trying to propagate the atheist theories like Darwinism and the Big Bang?
Is there some kind of economic motive?
In other words, if people are not religious, maybe they buy more products.
Oh, I think that the economics come second, really. Because people are buying more products because they want to enjoy material nature. It's there, of course. The economic motive will be there. If Krishna consciousness becomes successful, as to some extent it is, you know. It's only now that you see, you know, the National Beef Council or whatever it is, put in ads in magazines, it says, you know, beef, real food for real people. So as Krishna consciousness becomes successful and the values of Krishna consciousness become taken up by more and more people, you'll see, you know. I hate to think of it, but, you know, one of the real big enemies of Krishna consciousness could be Roy Rogers and Dale Evans. I always thought of them as good guys. Well, you're too young, but I grew up watching these guys on television. They had a, you know, a horse named Trigger, who's now embalmed. Anyway, and also a dog named Bullet. I could have been learning about, you know, Narada Muni and Ramchandra, but I learned about Roy Rogers. You know, right down the street there's a restaurant called Roy Rogers. It's big beef thing. And they're also born-again Christians, you know. Dale Evans, anyway, she still shows up on, you know, these talk shows, these Christian talk shows, you know, about how she found Jesus. So I have a feeling there might be a coalition, you know, of the meat industry plus born-again Christians. Plus, you know, manufacturers of tobacco. Well, they're on the run anyway. There's a broad enough front against them. And then, of course, the liquor industry, which really nobody wants to take on because everybody drinks practically. Nobody can think of life without a drink. You know, when the 19th Amendment, the prohibition was passed, everybody, every senator who voted for it, or every state legislature who voted for it, everybody was making arrangements to get some booze, you know, even while they satisfied, you know, their pious nature. Nobody really intended to go without a drink past this thing. But you can see that if Krishna consciousness actually becomes successful, there will be people to whom it will be an economic threat, you know, whose livelihoods depend upon breaking the four regulative principles. So that will be definitely. Krishna consciousness has a polarizing effect. As people become devotees, other people become demons. Because everyone right now, it's all mixed up, and the devotees out there who are acting like demons simply because they don't know any better. When people become devotees, other people will hate that more and more. So it'll have a polarizing effect. That's unfortunate. But that's going to be there, because there's just some people that when it comes right down to it, you know, when they find out what God is, they discover that's who I've been hating all along. I've had a lot of hate in me, and I've directed it toward various people, but now it's really satisfied when I know it's Krishna. And so they got this kind of unfocused. I've seen this in the anti-cult movement. People, you know, who are just kind of going along with life with their gigantic, unfocused rage. That, you know, when their son or something becomes a devotee, they really found out where to put it. So that will happen, unfortunately. And the fact will be there. It's time to stop now. Oh, glory to Srila Prabhupada.